This is Talking Business.
I'm joined now by Brian Middleton, who's the Vice President for Australia and New Zealand of a business called Bentley Systems, which is an infrastructure business also engaged in what are called smart cities. G'day, Brian.
G'day, Alan. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks for coming in. Now, listen, I read an interesting piece in Atlantic. You might have read it too in February, which starts off by saying there's no such thing as a smart city. The term smart city is interesting but not important. It's a snazzy political label used by a modern alliance of leftist urbanites and tech industrialists. What do you reckon? What do you think of that?
Well, I think they may have a point to a degree. I mean, what a smart
city.
Yes, what a smart city is different things to different people. But if you bring it back to the economics of a city environment, there are certainly valuable outcomes that can be achieved by having a strategy that may have a tagline of smart city, but ultimately it's a business objective that we need to improve the way that we deliver the services, infrastructure to the citizens who live in cities, particularly given the growth that we're seeing of population.
So tell me what your definition of a smart city is.
A smart city for me is just simply a city that uses all available information to deliver a social, economic or an environmental benefit to the citizens who live there.
Right. Well, that's what a city is, I suppose, isn't it?
Well, without...
I guess that's the point, isn't it?
Well, it is. Without the people, a city is just infrastructure, road, rail, bridge, utilities, power stations. It is so... You know, we have a massive magnetic pull to cities around the world, and we're seeing a massive population urbanization going on. I mean, currently 50% of the population of the world live in 2.6% of the landmass. That's and use 70% of the resources, and it's growing. So how do we deliver to meet that demand?
Do we detect a Scottish accent there, Brian?
Yes, you do. You do, Alan. Although I left
Scotland. It's a fair while ago.
It was. I left when I was 17, so it's the Scottish accent seems to hang on.
Well, it was only 10 years ago, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, I'm only 27.
This piece in the Atlantic went on to say that London is supposed to be a smart city. However, London is a god-awful urban mess.
Yes.
London does have some of the best international smart city conferences. So everyone turns up in London to have a conference about it, but it's a bit of a mess. Would you go along with that?
Look, every city, it's a bit like when in battle. They say, you know, every plan is great until the first shot is fired. I think creating a smart city, you have to deal with the urban mess that we inherit. And the history and heritage, this is where the massive opportunity is, because currently the infrastructure that's delivered to cities is not, the intelligence isn't there in terms of the assets. So asset management in its simplest terms is really easy. What have we got? Where is it? What condition is it in? What service level does it deliver to the citizens? And are they satisfied with that service level? And if not, how much do we have to spend to achieve that service level that they do demand? And most cities don't know what they've got, where it is, and what condition it's in. So we're starting a little bit behind the eight ball. But fortunately, the advances in technology make the recapture of that brownfield infrastructure really simple nowadays.
It seems to me in Australia we've got a problem, and I'm hoping that you're working hard to solve the problem, which is that because the Australia is so big, there's always been this sense that we've got tons of space in Australia, and so we haven't really thought about building cities up rather than out, if you know what I mean. Like the cities in Australia have always kind of, they've always thought, oh, we'll just build out. But actually we haven't kept up the infrastructure for the building out. And now everyone's kind of building up. There's all these apartment towers going on.
Yep.
And we're scrambling to deal with that as well. So there's a kind of a dichotomy or a confusion about whether we're going out or up. What do you think of that?
Well, you're absolutely right. Australia, same land mass, pretty much as the USA, but a population of 24.5 million. So engineers have to be smart in the way that they apply themselves, because we don't have the revenues coming in from a mass population to effectively deliver that. There are two ways. If you build out, the cost of building out is significantly higher than building up. And we're moving towards the generation, so the next generation. We've got the millennials in 2020. We're sort of moving into the connected generation, Generation C as they're terming it. And we've got a more highly educated population. They're more demanding. They want to live where they want to live. They're mobile. So if you don't give them what they want in terms of their environmental needs and their work needs, then they'll go somewhere else. But the cities are a magnetic pull, I think I said before, and we need to provide them with better transportation, better infrastructure. We need to start thinking about vertical transportation systems as opposed to horizontal transportation systems, and we have to be able to afford to maintain the effectiveness of that infrastructure. You mentioned London before. I mean, we're actually been highly involved with a smart ICT provider to a project in London called Crossrail. It's a 30 odd billion dollar infrastructure project, the largest civil infrastructure project in Europe. It's delivering a 10% increase in the transportation capacity across London when it goes live next year. So
how's it doing that? 10%? That's colossal.
It's colossal, but it started, the thought process for that started in the 70s. It got approved in 2008. And what was really important around that project was that it was triggered at the same time as the global financial crisis. So a lot of the projects in the UK were cancelled because they didn't have the funding for them. The government supported that, but they also said, we're not giving you any more money. And the chief executive of Crossrail, a guy called Andrew Wolstenholme, was actually a director of a major project delivery company. And he wrote an article or a paper called Never Let a Good Crisis Pass You By. And he took a completely new approach to how he was going to deliver the infrastructure. And he said, look, we're going to start with the end in mind. What is this infrastructure intended to do? How are we going to capture that information? How are we going to reuse that information so that we don't do what we traditionally do in projects around the world, which is throw away the DNA of the infrastructure when we hand it across to the operator of the infrastructure? So we have two different groups, people who design and construct the infrastructure and then a different group who operate and maintain it. And they have different priorities.
So I'm wondering what the Crossrail is. I mean, and specifically whether we should do it here, whatever it is.
Well, so Crossrail is a rail project going east to west across London, with 36 kilometres of twin bore tunnel going underneath London.
More tunnels.
Wow. So exactly the same as in Australia. So in Australia, you've got the Melbourne Metro project, you've got Cross River Rail in Brisbane, who are looking to undertake similar type projects. And I would suggest that we can adopt what other people around the world are doing. And let me give you the metrics here, because I think they're really important, Alan, that historically, projects, rail projects, road projects, bridge projects, blowout on schedule and on cost. Rail projects, on average, over a 70-year period, have blown out by 144%. So that means if you've got a $10 billion project, it's more likely than not to cost you $14.4 billion. The Crossrail project, $30 billion, is going to be delivered within $25 to $50 million of its original budget. And I emphasize the point, original budget. Not a revised budget that people put in so they can claim that they're
That's got to be rubbish because, as you point out, it never happens that way.
Well, because they took a new approach, because they actually mandated, they took ownership of the process and they said to the project delivery companies, because every project delivery company has their own requirements, has their own preferred solutions, different tools, different languages that they want to deliver things in. And the owner said, no. That's not going to happen here. You're going to give us the information in this file format because that means we can maintain it across the life of the infrastructure. You're going to provide that information and store it in our common data environment, our connected data environment, so we maintain the intelligence that you're creating. and we're going to own the intellectual property. And if you don't want to follow those rules, then don't bid on our project. Now, that's taking advantage of the GFC because it was the only show in town. But I think it showed that, and as an outcome, the project delivery companies have been profitable, and Crossrail is going to be delivered on schedule. It's unheard of.
I take it we're not doing that in Australia.
Look, we're seeing enthusiasm and appetite for it, but it's really difficult to change the status quo. And to stay, we're seeing more success, I would suggest, in Asia, Southeast Asia, and in China than we're seeing in Australia, for sure. So the KVMRT project in Malaysia is applying the same methodologies and same principles to their project. They've just improved their efficiency on their second line. So they have a three-line project, line one, line two, line three. They've just improved the efficiency on line two, where they applied the Crossrail methodologies by 30%. So, yes, we're seeing it being applied. It's really difficult because you have to bring people on a journey, and people don't want to change because there's a lot of vested interests that inhibit that change.
We've run out of time, Brian, but it's great talking to you. Thanks.
Thanks, Alan. Appreciate it.
Really interesting. So that was Brian Middleton, the Vice President for Australia and New Zealand at Bentley Systems, the infrastructure business.